Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Writer's Way, a Right Attitude radio show. This program is brought to you by the Office of Quality Enhancement Plan. The Right Attitude is Savannah State University's campus-wide initiative that enhances student learning by fostering positive attitudes toward writing. Thanks for joining us. I am your host, Melvina Sykes. Today, we present our program in three parts. Our intrepid interviewer, Sierra Walton, speaks to three working professionals about the importance of writing in their careers. And what we learned putting this show together was just how unavoidable the art of writing is. How we think of writers as just the people with their names on the spines of the books, when really, writing is the engine that drives all kinds of creative output. It reminds us of that famous commencement speech by the late David Foster Wallace, the one where he starts by telling the anecdote about two young fish who meet an old fish. The old fish asks, "How's the water?" And the young fish turn to each other and one asks, basically, "What the heck is water?" When he told that story, Wallace was illustrating a point about how we sometimes stop noticing things that are basic and ubiquitous and constantly surrounding us, even if they're crucial to our success or our survival. They're so obvious that we forget about them. We think writing is one of those things, and in our show today, we set out to give you a reminder. So let's get started. For our first act, we'll be hearing from screenwriter Nakia Stevens. Ms. Stevens was on Savannah State University campus to give a QEP-sponsored lunch and learn. Sierra Walton caught up with her afterward.
Hello, my name is Sierra Walton. I'm the Student Communications Outreach Intern at the QEP. And today we have a special guest. Her name is Nakia Stevens. And she is a screenwriter and filmmaker. She's also a graduate of Savannah State University's Mass Communications Program. And she also studies screenwriting in Los Angeles, California. While in Los Angeles, Nakia launched her own poetry blog called You Damn Right and her screenwriting company, Damn Right Originals. While juggling these two platforms, she set out to complete her first feature film called Muse. And after its success, she wrote and released a hit web series on YouTube entitled Life Under Construction. And she also has a website entitled www.damnrightoriginals.com. So without further ado, I would like to warmly welcome Ms. Nakia Stevens. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. I definitely love your hair.
Thank you. I love your hair.
Thank you. So, to start, how did you become interested in screenwriting?
Well, I've always enjoyed writing, creative writing, and I love movies. But when I was, I guess when I was younger, I didn't see a lot of people who looked like me doing that. So I didn't know it was a name for it. Mm-hmm. So I just said, oh, I want to write and then make movies or something. Like, I knew that I wanted to do that. So yeah, I've always known that I wanted to do something in those kind of fields. So
I can tell that you have a colorful imagination. So can you tell us like what inspires you when you're developing your scripts for your newest short films or movies?
I get inspired by a lot of different things. I travel a lot. Sometimes if I meet someone in my travels and they tell me a quick story, like, you know, people just make, you know, small talk. And they're like, yeah, my husband, he's in the Marines and this, that, and the third. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. So I'll just engage in conversation with them. And if I find something interesting in what they're saying, I'll even write a film about whatever they said you know, about a part of their culture, you know what I mean? Conversations with people that I find are interesting or like I just observe a lot of things. So I will sit back and like if you're talking to someone else, I'm like, oh, they got a good conversation going on. Like I'll steal inspiration from anywhere. Something that I'm passionate about. If something makes me angry that happens in the world, like I use my voice as a screenwriter to like bring different things to the human like thinking zone, I guess, so to speak. But because I like to create things that get people talking. So even if it's controversial or even if it's like something that people don't like to talk about, and it's like, oh, that's like, why you want to talk about this? Like, why do you want to talk about, you know, homosexuality or why do you want to talk about, like anything? I have no censor, like when it comes to talking about different things, because some things need to be talked about, whether it makes you uncomfortable or not. So I get inspiration from anywhere.
So I'm also a mass communications major here at Savannah State University. I would be interested in knowing, and like, in what ways has writing played a key role in your matriculation as a mass communication student here at Savannah State?
I was just telling someone this. When I first came in as a mass comm student, like as a freshman, I would wear my hair like straight. So they would say, oh, you have news anchor hair, da 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 da. So I'm like, really? Okay. So they immediately put me in things that put me in front of the camera, which was fine for me. I was just like, okay, I guess this is what I should go into. But as I would read the things, I would be more focused on the writing, and I'd be like, this writing sucks, or like, I could have wrote this better, or I don't want to say it like this. Like, that's when I realized that, first of all, I like to say things how I want to say it, so I want more creative freedom. Yeah. And second of all, I want to write. I don't care to be in front of the camera. So doing that really helped me early on know, okay, I don't want to be in front of the camera. I want to be the one writing the words. Right. And also, my creative writing class with Dr. Chad Ferries, that really made me realize, like, okay, I want to write. I want to, like, this is exactly what I want to do. I mean, because sometimes when you come in college, and like I said, I didn't have a name for what I wanted to do, and they didn't have a name for it here either, so I didn't know exactly which way to go. I just knew I wanted to be in mass communication because that's all the stuff I like. So I was there for radio, television, film. But I really wanted to write, but they didn't really have, you know, so I was just like, okay, I'm gonna figure it out on my way. So being in that creative writing class, I'm like, okay, I have to get into writing. But Mass Comm, at the time, I don't know if they offer it now, but at the time, Mass Comm only offered script writing for news, or for, it didn't offer screenwriting for television or screenwriting for film. And I was just like, okay, well, I don't wanna write news. And then I finally, when I got into my minor was English, I found a screenwriting class under English, and I'm like, why is this under English? This is for films and television and those types of mediums. So luckily I was an English minor and I found those classes, so I took two screenwriting classes. And then when I did foreign exchange in Ghana, I took a screenwriting class there too. So but those classes really, like, really let me know, like, this is exactly what I want to be doing. It's like, I got positive feedback. Like, my classmates was like, oh, that was a good story. Like, when we had to present, I'm like, you like that story? Okay, cool, you like that story. So I'm a screenwriter. Okay, I'm a screenwriter. So that really, like, shaped me here. Like, taking those creative writing classes and being forced to be in front of the camera made me realize I didn't want to be in front of the camera. So.
So how did your trip to Ghana or any other places that you've been affected your writing?
So I've been to a lot of different places, but I feel like Ghana was the longest that I've stayed in a place that wasn't, you know, that was outside of America. I stayed there my whole last semester of college. So 6 months I lived in Ghana, and we, like, actually lived there. We weren't in, like, a nice fancy hotel. We were in dorms. We went to class. We were living amongst the people of Ghana. And that really gave me the opportunity to clear my mind space, because I know being on campus, well, you should know, like, being on campus, you have all this other stuff to do, and it's just so, it's kind of claustrophobic. You're thinking about, oh, I need to take my test, or, oh, I need to do this, or I'm supposed to meet my friends for this party, or I'm supposed to study with this study group. It's just so much going on that you never get a chance to sit down and kind of, like, clear your thoughts. And so since I was in Ghana and I was away from all of that, I mean, we still had stuff, but I was kind of away from all of it. And I had more time to focus on what exactly I wanted to do. And that's when I wrote my first feature film in Ghana. I wrote Muse. I think I talked about it, but I wrote that entire script while I was in Ghana, and it was, like, uninterrupted. I could just really focus on that, and then that's when I realized, like, this is exactly what I want to do. So sometimes, like, college was a great experience, but if you're not focused, or if you are unsure which direction to go, you kind of, it kind of clouds, like, what you're supposed to be doing, or it gets in the way of what you could have been doing. Because I could have done a lot more. I did a lot of stuff while I was here, but I could have done a lot more with screenwriting while I was here too. So,
So with all this writing and coming up with new ideas and creating stories, how is it when you have to transfer it to the big screen?
Well, when you start off as an independent filmmaker, you kind of have to wear a lot of hats. So, I'm usually, like, the producer of most of my things right at this point, because I'm transitioning into, you know, from independent to maybe distributed, or, like, getting distribution. But I've just been determined. I'm not the type of person to, like go door to door and try to get people to read my scripts. Mm-hmm. I like do my own thing and build my house and make it so nice that people want to knock on my door and say, hey, what you doing in here? You know what I mean? That's how I am. So I try to like write a lot and let people know what I'm doing. Like I'll like on Instagram, I'll post like snippets of like a little bit of my scripts, mm-hmm. like maybe the beginning or the very middle where it gets kind of real. Mm-hmm. And so people are like, oh, what's that about? So I'm like, oh, it's just a new script. I'm running, da, da, da. And then all of a sudden I'll have messages from like these directors, these independent directors who can really shoot really good footage. And they're like, oh, I like your writing. Like, I want to team up with you. And then mm-hmm. we end up teaming up on something and making magic, you know? So that's usually what I do. I don't like to wait until I guess like Hollywood comes to me, because nowadays, for Netflix content and stuff like that, people are looking at YouTube. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? People are looking for people who are putting things out on YouTube.
Right.
And they're like, okay, if this person can make this good web series for just like under $1,000, what will happen if we give them $100,000 to recreate the web series? That's what they're doing. So I'm like, why not just make my own stuff? And then if it's good, which I think it is good, and the more I do it, the better I get. So if it's amazing like it is, then people mm-hmm. will come to me and say, hey, we like what you're doing. We want you to do this. And then there's my opportunity. So you have to create your own opportunities, which I tell people that all the time.
Yeah, that is a good something good to live by.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as being a writer, could you please describe like your growth as a writer from when you first began to where you are now as a screenwriter, a filmmaker, and a producer?
Yeah, sure. So in the Lunch and Learn, I mentioned that my first semester of my last year here, because mm-hmm. my second semester I was in Ghana, but my first semester of my last year here, I applied for grad school. I laugh about it all the time, but I applied for grad school at USC. And I didn't get in. And I was like, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. My stuff was good. And now looking back, like my stuff was horrible.
Okay.
And so, and it might have not been horrible to people who weren't trained in screenwriting. Like a regular Joe would have been like, oh, this is really good.
Mm-hmm.
But it really, like for people who were trained in screenwriting, you can tell it was unprofessional.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being said, I think I was just at a point where I was just writing stories, and I wasn't really diving into who is this character or what is their breaking point, or mm-hmm. you know, is this dialogue even needed in this scene, what can you take out and the scene still be the same. So I wasn't getting into the details of screenwriting. I was just really good at storytelling, but right. I wasn't advanced in details of character analysis and this and the third. So I can really see the difference from that script that I submitted to USC till now, like the scripts that I'm writing now. And I feel like if I go pick that script back up and like revamp it a little bit, I think it would have been great. And another thing I didn't do was rewrite. And a lot of people mess up on that, like write their first draft and they're like, that's it, this right. is amazing. And it's like, no, your first draft is never amazing. It's never amazing. So I've learned to rewrite. I think for Muse, I was kind of forced to rewrite because of like some circumstances with some shooting days.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of went back and I changed the whole ending. But I'm glad that that happened because it gave me opportunity to look at the script again and then go back and do mm-hmm. some more things. So rewriting and learning from like the USC submission really like helps me understand that it's going to take more than just a great story mm-hmm. to have a good script, if that makes any
right.
sense. So yeah.
A question I have is, are there any moments when you have like writer's block, or you just have moments where you're like, I really want to get this done, but I don't want to rush it? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you do in those?
That just happened to me. So I wrote a dark comedy. So it was my first time writing dark comedy. So I was excited because I had this really cool idea and I was like, I want to try another genre. So the beginning and everything was really cool. And then I posted a snippet on Instagram and they were like, oh, I want to see the rest of this. And I'm like, yeah, I need to finish it. So I'm like typing. And I finished it.
Uh-huh.
But I really think I was rushing because I was so excited
right.
because the beginning was so good. And I was just like, okay, I need to finish it. I need to hurry up. And I cast forward and everything. And then I had a moment where I'm like, the ending is not that good. Mm-hmm. It could be better. So I told my cast, I'm like, so we're going to shoot it, but next spring. By next spring, everything should be ready. So I'm giving myself time to like go back and really like, give it time instead of trying to rushing it, because it's, you just get, sometimes I just get so excited to where I prematurely try to finish something and just put it out there because the beginning and the middle is good, and I totally forget about the attention, give attention to the ending. So I've learned to, like, if I get writer's block, or if I feel like I get to a point where I'm just typing just to finish it and not really putting my all into it, I will step away from the project and move on to another one and then come back to it. So that's what happened with that one. Now I decided to step away from it, focus on my web series, Cream and Coffee, that I'm doing now. Okay. And then once I'm kind of done with Cream and Coffee, I'm probably going to go back to that one and then look at it with a fresh eye, you know? And it's funny how 2 months will make you think totally different. Like, I probably will go back and be like, what the heck is all of this? And I'll probably, like, copy and delete all of half the last, you know, scenes. So I'm excited to go back and look at it with a fresh eye, a fresh pair of eyes. So, yeah.
So I actually have friends who are into, like, video production and stuff of that nature. Now, their biggest obstacle, I guess you could say, is their schedules conflict with each other's. So when it comes time to, like, usually, I guess you could say their consistency. They don't have consistency. So they're trying to build more consistency, but also at the same time put out, like, I guess,
quality work.
Right, quality work.
So are they college students?
They are.
So, like I said, college is amazing, but it'll kind of get in the way of, I guess, what exactly you want to do. I think that's why my junior and senior year were my best years, because I was more into what I wanted to do. So, like, when you're first starting out, you gotta worry about math classes, and you're like, that's not my passion. I don't wanna do math, or I don't wanna do biology right now. I wanna write, you know, but you don't really have the time because it kind of gets in the way of doing those things. So I would say, instead of, I don't know, that's kind of hard because I don't like to tell people to wait, because I like to tell people to go ahead and do what you can. But I would say, like, kind of just map out your, like, sit down and really map out what you can do and what you can't. If you know that you'll have a lot of time over the summer, plan for a lot of shooting in the summer. You know, plan to just map out, okay, we want to do this talk show type thing, and map out what dates. We want to do a web series also, map out what dates. And by the time you get to the summer, you can just focus on that. And nothing will kind of get in your way because you have all that time. So I would just say plan accordingly. I don't want to tell them to wait, but just plan for when they both have, or they all have, a lot of time. You know?
Okay.
But that's hard, because I always struggle with that too. In college, I struggle with trying to find time to do stuff that I like to do or that I'm passionate about. So.
Okay. Well, thank you for answering that.
Yeah.
So, being a screenwriter means that you're behind the camera, basically calling the shots through your pen, in a sense. So, can you please share with us how the film industry is for screenwriters?
So, for screenwriters, it's not as easy as people may think. People think, oh, you write a hit script and then you're gonna get $1 billion to make it. Like, no, because it's a lot of screenwriters in the world. And really, it's hard because, okay, so for a director, if somebody's looking to hire a director, they can send a director's reel and you can look at everything that they've done, but you can look at it. But for screenwriters, for some reason, when you have a lot of words, people don't want to, I mean, honestly, people don't want to, like, look at all of that. So let's say, imagine someone wanting to hire a screenwriter, and one script is 100 pages, right? And you get eight people. If you only have 8 screenwriters, which you never do, it's always more than that. But even 8 screenwriters, that's 800 pages that you have to read. Nobody's really trying to do that, honestly. Right. Like, imagine, like, a professor saying, okay, read this 800 page whatever. And you like, I ain't gonna read that. Like, you kind of skim through it, blah, blah, blah. So we don't really get the full, I don't know, the full advantage of, like, having someone really read every word line for line, like, because they're trying to hurry up, they're trying to find the next best thing. So it's kind of like we have to find creative ways to like market ourselves. And also, when you do get your big break, that's never really it. Like, you have to keep working. Like, you can easily get your big break, and then after that's over, it's like you have to go job hunting again.
Right.
So it's not like something that's permanent. Because once a film is over, then that's it. Found your next thing. You know what I mean? So you have to always be writing and always make sure you have a lot of things in stock. So like when you're doing one film, you can be trying to find out what you're going to do next. So it's not as it's easy as people think it is. But I'm not doing it for that reason anyway. So, and if you are doing it for that reason, stop now, because you're not going to make $1 million easy like that. But when you're passionate about something, like, the money usually follows anyway. Okay. And I want to go into TV, so it'll be more consistent. Because TV, you have a seasons. That's what I meant. Mm-hmm. You have a first season, second season, so you can get signed for all of those seasons and be set for kind of like 2 years maybe, versus a movie. It's like when that movie's over, then find your next thing. So that's how it is in the film industry. And filmmakers get agents just like actors get. But I'm like I'm saying, I'm learning as I go too. So I just found that out probably 4 months ago. So I'm like, okay, an agent. And then what else? So when you want to transition from independent to going Hollywood, you have to know about all those different things. You have to have spec scripts and all this good stuff. So, but like I always say, if you don't know something and you know you don't know it, it's your own fault. Because it's information everywhere. Right. Literally anything you want to know, you can find out on the internet. You can find in a book. You can ask somebody. So just I would tell people, like, if you want to go... If you want to start off as independent, that's cool. But if you also want to know the business behind screenwriting or go into Hollywood, you can research it and try to find out what everything that you need to have prepared for that. So.
Okay. So I actually went on your website the other day and I watched the trailer for Sugar Water. So after I watched the trailer, it kind of made me think about my own grandmother. She passed away probably about 2 years ago now. And it just brought back all those good memories and stuff growing up. So with that being said, what do you want to leave your audience with after they read your work or watch your films?
I never pick something for my audience. I just make sure to be as passionate about everything that I do so that whatever that person needs, they can take it. So I don't say, when my movie's over, I want people to cry and be sad. Like, because no, you know, sometimes you might want to be inspired, or like maybe you need a good cry so you can cry, or you want to just remember your grandmother so you should smile, or you want to be inspired to write something so you be inspired. So I just want them to feel something. I don't care. Even if you're mad and you're like, I don't like that ending. Why didn't you like the ending? Like, I want you to feel something. I just never want someone to leave and to say, I don't know how to feel. Then that's when I'll be like, no.
Right.
So I want people to take what they need. Like, that's okay. Take what you need from it.
So as long as some type of feeling or emotion is evoked from that film, then your job is done.
Okay. My job is done.
So is there any last words of advice that you would like to give any SSU students, especially those majoring in journalism or mass communications?
I want to say, do what you can with what you have. Like, a lot of people say, I have to wait till I get all this money to make my film, or I have to wait till I have the right equipment. Like, it's literally people out here making movies on their iPhones with $100. So you do what you, because the more you do it, the better you get at it. And so if you wait until you think so you're ready to do something, then by that time it's too late, and and you're not as good as you think you are. So what if I would have waited to write my first script until I got this like fancy software? Then my first script would have sucked, because if I wouldn't have wrote a sucky script before, then, you know, it would have came out during that time. So do what you can with what you have, and always create with just create with a mindset to like serve, you know, greater than yourself. You know what I mean? So create with the intention of helping other people. You know what I mean? Or having people feel something, right? So I mean, that's my main thing.
Okay.
My main thing.
Well, I definitely thank you for sitting down with us. On behalf of the QEP and the rest of Savannah State, we just want to thank you for taking the time do this interview. So,
thank you.
No problem.
You have just listened to an interview with Nakia Stevens. Please stay tuned. We will be back after our 1 minute break.
I'm Dr. Lisa Yont, the director of the Right Attitude Program at Savannah State University. Here's the writing tip of the day.
I am Deanne Goins, a professional writing tutor at the FSU Writing Center, and I bring you the Right Attitude Writing Tip of the Day. And a positive is a noun or noun phrase that renames another noun right beside it.
The Right Attitude Writing Tip of the Day is brought to you by the SSU Writing Center and the Office of the Quality Enhancement Plan. The Right Attitude is Savannah State University's campus-wide initiative to enhance student learning by improving attitudes about writing. Visit the SSU Writing Center in Payne Hall to get assistance with your writing projects, and to learn more about how you can improve your writing attitudes and skills, visit qep.savannahstate.edu.
You're listening to The Writer's Way, a Right Attitude radio show. I am Melvina Sykes. On today's show, we're hearing from writers about how to succeed in various professional industries and settings. For the second act of our program, we turn to visiting instructor of photojournalism at Savannah State University, Mr. Jason Johnson. Mr. Johnson is the author of the book Soul Sanctuary, Visions of the African American Worship Experience. He has photographs on display in the Smithsonian, and they can be found in many other museums and publications. He too gave a QEP Lunch and Learn talk on Savannah State campus and sat down with SSU student Sierra Walton afterwards for this interview.
Hello everyone, my name is Sierra Walton. I am the Student Communications and Outreach Intern at the QEP. And today we have a special guest. His name is Mr. Jason Michelow Johnson. And he is an award-winning photographer, author, and visiting instructor in journalism and mass communications here at Savannah State University. He is the author of the best-selling book, Soul Sanctuary, Images of the African American Worship Experience. His photographs are in the permanent collections of the Smithsonian Institution, the St. Louis Art Museum, and the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston. Johnson has taken exclusive photos of some of the world's most recognizable persons, including President Barack Obama, Nelson Mandela, Muhammad Ali, Princess Diana, Fidel Castro, and Oprah Winfrey. With 40 years of professional photographic experience, Johnson's images have appeared in 30 books, over 60 magazines, and numerous national newspapers. Without further ado, I would like to introduce Mr. Johnson. How are you doing today?
Excellent. Good to be here.
Thank you. One thing we're interested in here at Savannah State, I know students are probably interested in knowing or trying to figure out how words and images connect. So can you explain the connection between the image and the word, especially when it comes to the art of photojournalism and the craft of writing?
Well, absolutely. Well, just like writers try to think of words that give you a visual picture.
Exactly.
Photographers try to come up with pictures that are worth a thousand words. Mm-hmm. And in my case, as a freelance writer and photographer, I like to come up with pictures that are worth $1,000.
Right.
But the words are intertwined because it's all about expressing one's thoughts. And words are the language metaphors or the language linkages in order to convey a thought to a person. Mm-hmm. So we use language and we use words to convey those thoughts. And it's intertwined because even when you have a picture, say in an exhibition or book, mm-hmm. you have to identify. In photojournalism, we call that caption writing. So the caption is a brief description of what the picture is. So it leaves no doubt.
Right.
And we do that by employing what we call the five W's and the H, which is who, what, when, where, why, and sometimes how.
Okay. All right. So, knowing that you're a photographer, you've taken so many astounding images and breathtaking images. What was it challenging to take your photographs and frame them with descriptions? And is there a process that goes into looking at certain photos and being able to share the underlying messages within those photographs?
Well, actually, that's one of the fun parts of the job. I mean, I like naming the photographs and writing the descriptions as much as shooting them. It's like coming up with a song
right.
and coming up with a song title afterwards. Mm. Some people come up with the title and then they write the song. Mm. Other people start with a melody and then they come up with a title later. I always start with the title. So when I was working on my first solo book, Soul Sanctuary, mm-hmm. I knew I had to have a riveting, captivating, instantly recognizable title.
Right.
I looked through many books, hymnals, Bible verses, church directories, listen to gospel shows, trying to think of some words that would identify and encapsulate all that I wanted to shoot, all that I wanted to convey about the African-American worship experience. And so I came up with this double entendre. It just, like, something, mantra from heaven, you know, a soul sanctuary.
Right.
Soul being the embodiment of one's spirit, but it's also representative of the soul for music
right. In
the way African Americans worship. And having come out of Memphis, home of Stax Records, where it was known as Soulsville, so I had that working for me. And then sanctuary is that space inside the church where we worship. But it's also a place that is set aside for that which we want to preserve, like a game sanctuary or some area that's protected by the park land. And so it may be a bird sanctuary. But it's something special we want to preserve, and we don't want people to destroy it. So you put the two together, and you have a double entendre on the soul sanctuary. So it's really like getting four meanings
right. For
the price of one.
Right. The name's, you know, it's real smooth and it flows.
It flows. Right.
I really appreciate the name. I love it.
And for PR marketing people, they like that.
Yeah.
You don't want to kind of like how the Holy Ghost got hold of me and turned me around.
Right. Short, simple, and
short, simple. You can always use your subtitle
right. As
a more descriptive detail.
Exactly.
So in my case, soul sanctuary. Punch. Boom.
Gotcha.
Images tell you what it is,
right. Pictures
of the African-American worship experience, which is a totally unique experience in
itself. Right. So how would you describe your writing style and process, and how often do you write, and what do you write about?
I write almost daily, actually, yeah. Writing to me is as important as photography, and photography is as important as eating. And so, eating is very important to me. I don't like to miss days of eating. I write extemporaneous thoughts. I write quotations. I write down ideas for projects, for exhibitions, for books, for future. But I like to write down what we used to call sayings. Sometimes things come to you and people would describe as inspirational thoughts. So I write down a lot of inspirational thoughts. I used to put my thoughts down on post-it notes and some notebooks and pieces of paper and all this stuff, but I could never find it when I needed it.
Right.
And I could never remember what piece of paper I put it on. So that just drove me crazy. So when they came out with the large-scale post-it notes, so to speak, you know, the ones we use on the flip charts, I bought those, and I put them all the way down my hallway. I have a long hallway.
Oh, wow.
So I have these huge post-it notes, you know, 3 feet by 4 feet post-it notes, and I just take a nice magic marker, one that won't bleed through, so I don't have to repaint the walls. But the eraser type that we use on the whiteboards, and I write my thoughts down as they come to me immediately.
Oh, wow.
And that does two things. Number one, it gets it out of my head onto paper.
Right.
Number two, because it's on my hallway, now I'm passing it multiple times a day, and it's reinforcement. And number three, whenever I need to find some inspirational words for a talk, a presentation, or for a friend, or someone, I have a lot of friends in the ministry,
right. Sometimes
they call me on the morning of and say, I'd like to do a talk on this, or my sermon is going to be on this. You got anything you can add to it? I can just walk out in the hallway and look up some of my writings and give them a nice, you know, quote
that
they can hang their hat on and develop a sermon around.
That's different. I've never heard anybody doing anything like that with the big sticky notes.
Yeah.
That's something that I would do, think about doing. So just to continue, at what age did you discover your love for photography, and how has it impacted your life?
I was probably about 11 when I really discovered that I love photography, when I got a decent camera. My first camera was just a little box camera, point and shoot, that had been in a toy. It's part of a little briefcase, like a little I Spy detective kind of briefcase, you know. But when I turned 11, I remember taking some of my first pictures. And then in the 10th grade, I asked my brother for $25 to buy a Polaroid color pack camera. Mm-hmm. This is the old Instamatic cameras where
okay.
you pull it out and wait 60 seconds and you peel it off and you see it. Came with a flash cube, four little cubes, you spin, and you get four shots of the cube.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted. So I distinctly remember that December Christmas of 72. And so he sent me the $25 and I rushed down to the drugstore, you know, typical like Walgreens
type. Yeah.
And I was just so elated to buy this camera. And I forgot to ask him for enough money for film and flash cube. So it was about another 2 weeks before I got enough money to buy film for it. But that began my career.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I ended up taking my camera to school every day. And I got good enough to charge a dollar photo to my classmates. And so I was making sometimes $16 a day.
Oh, wow.
Taking pictures of my classmates.
Oh, wow. So you're known for your call and response method, shooting style. Could you describe that type of style and how did you develop this technique and what do you think it evokes?
Well, it's a play off the verbal call and response or the singing call and response.
Mm-hmm.
Having grown up in the black church all my life, in the earlier years, a lot of elderly people mm-hmm. could not read, and so they may not be able to follow along in the hymnal
mm-hmm.
to actually read the words. So the song leader would call the words out. We called it lining a hymn.
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew where that came from mm-hmm. until I started working on Soul Sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew what they were doing. I didn't connect the dots. So someone, the song leader might say, Lord, I stretch my hands out to thee. And then everybody would start singing, Lord, I stretch my hands out to thee. To me, it sounded like a bunch of old people moaning and groaning. Mm-hmm. And that would always be a part of devotional before the preaching started. And I used to hate that part. Because number one, I couldn't find the words. They weren't in the hymnals anymore.
Right.
But the person who knew the words were calling it out.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the congregation were responding, call and respond.
Mm-hmm.
So the call and the visual call and respond, which is my shooting style, is action and reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at the action of the minister or the singer or whoever the main subject is, and then I turn around at the audience to see their reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Because Sir Isaac Newton's third law of motion says that for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to capture that third law of motion.
Mm-hmm.
And see, photography is a composite of many disciplines. It is chemistry, it is physics, it is geometry, it's mathematics, it's sociology, it's psychology, and it's all predicated upon timing, vision, and intent.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that goes into the call and response.
Okay. So you teach photojournalism here.
I've been accused of that.
So, in your opinion, why is photojournalism so important and vital in mass media?
Well, it's important because you cannot separate words from pictures. And literally, the definition of photojournalism
mm-hmm.
is photo, short for photography,
right.
and journalism, short for journal. So, it is literally pictures and words to tell a story. And it's vitally important that you learn both crafts, not just one or other. Plus, in today's marketplace, journalists no longer have singular positions.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a broadcast, you're not just going out to be a reporter
right.
and taking your film crew, your sound man, your light man, or your light woman,
right.
you know, your sound woman. No, you're going out, setting up tripods, putting the camera on it,
mm-hmm.
interviewing the person, and then coming back and also editing
mm-hmm.
and writing the story and going on the air. So because we have a multiplicity of mm-hmm. jobs that are required to use all of these skills, some call it mojo or mobile journalist or multimedia journalist,
mm-hmm.
then you have to learn how to visually present the news.
Mm-hmm.
And now when a person comes on to do a report on a live scene, they have to take out the cell phone, take still pictures. Mm-hmm. They may have to capture some video, email that back to a website or upload it to the station's website before they get back and do the finished story that will go to the television news. Mm-hmm. And so we're using social media and mobile media more and more, and that's why it's important to learn photojournalism.
So I understand that I saw a few of your students at the Lunch and Learn event taking pictures and things of that nature.
Yes.
So what can you describe how you have challenged your students while you have been here at Savannah State?
Well, my main challenge to them has been to read. It all starts with reading. They can't write well if they don't read well. And I'm trying to get them to write well so that they can augment or supplement the pictures.
Right.
Pictures are fine, but they can't tell the total story in and of themselves or by themselves. And I find that our students do not read enough. Mm-hmm. And they not only do not develop strong vocabularies, but they're not up on current events or historical events. And you can't be in the news business or the mass communication business if you can't communicate about what's going on or what has gone on and what possibly will go on. So you must read to stay up on current events and news. Mm-hmm. And that will make you a stronger writer the more you read.
Right.
So I challenge my students to read more. I think they have to get out of a lackadaisical comfort zone.
Right.
And pick up a book.
Exactly. So are there any parting thoughts that you would like to leave with our audience and our listeners today?
I guess the most important thing I would want your listeners and your audience to recognize is that most of the things that are important in life have been written down in books. Mm-hmm. And some of the most lasting thoughts have been put in books. Not on tape, not on DVD, certainly not on Betamax and VHS. All those are going by the wayside because they're just technologies.
Right.
Writing, going all the way back to hieroglyphics of caves, preceded all of that. In the Bible that most people who are Christians read, it says, in the beginning was the Word.
Right.
Not even a picture. It said, in the beginning was the Word. And so I would challenge them to dig deeper and look at books, because books are going to be with us always.
Right.
Hopefully the Smithsonian will be with us always, because I've got work in it on the collection of the new African American Museum. It's opening up on September 24th of this year. 50 of the photographs of Soul Sanctuary are already in the permanent collection. So if we don't look at books, we won't know that it exists. We can't wait to get it all on a mobile device. It is, you can't get a coffee table book of this quality on a little small iPhone or Android.
Right.
I mean, this is fantastic here. And plus, if you get a new book, it comes with that.
Yeah,
the new book smell. You know, that's better than a new car smell.
Right.
Because you don't have to pay on it as long. Interest free.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking with us today. Congratulations on all of your achievements.
Thank you.
And thank you all for watching and listening.
You're listening to The Writer's Way, a Right Attitude radio show, produced in association with WHCJ Savannah and the Savannah State University QEP. I'm your host, Melvina Sykes. We've arrived at the third act of our program. We'll hear from Ms. Crystal Hart, a public relations specialist and owner of a PR firm in Hinesville, Georgia. Ms. Hart visited Savannah State University campus for a QEP Lunch and Learn. SSU student Sierra Walton returns yet again to bring us this interview.
Good afternoon. My name is Sierra Walton, and I am the Student Communications Outreach Intern at the QEP. And today we have a special guest. Her name is Ms. Crystal Hart. She's the owner of Sparrow Communications, a public relations agency based in Hinesville, Georgia, and prior public relations manager of the city of Hinesville.
Crystal Hart is a graduate of Florida State University in Tallahassee, Florida, with a Bachelor of Arts in Communication and a concentration in Public Relations and Political Communication. She is also a graduate of the Savannah State University Master's of Public Administration program. With nearly 10 years of public relations experience, Crystal Hart has worked in the public and private sectors, writing, editing, designing, training, developing policy, planning events, and managing social media accounts. She is quite the multidimensional woman. Without further ado, I would like to introduce and welcome Ms. Crystal Hart.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Good.
I just want to thank you for coming on behalf of the QEP, and that was a wonderful presentation and workshop that you gave us today about her tips in the PR world and how she communicates and how she interacts with her clients through social media. So let's just get into it. The first question for you that we have is, what is the difference between working in PR for a public sector like the city of Hinesville versus a private sector?
I'd say the first thing is that the public sector is a lot more slow to adapt to change. There's a longer process. There's more people involved. With the public sector, you have to take into account what everybody thinks, what the public thinks. You're constantly under scrutiny to make sure that you're being accountable to them. With the private sector, your audience or your client base and your demographics a little bit smaller. You can kind of specialize in different niches. So being able to speak directly to a smaller group in the private sector who wants your product or your service versus having to be accountable to everyone that your government governs is different.
Okay. So which sectors do you enjoy representing the most?
When I started out, public all the way, hence the public management master's program, it's because I pretty much wanted to be the voice for people who didn't understand government, who didn't always know what was going on. I wanted to break down some of those walls and barriers between government and the citizens they represent. So my goal was to come in and to be a communicator and someone that the public can trust to give them the information that they needed, as well as to take information from the public and give it to the leaders so that they can make informed decisions.
Okay.
So that was my goal for a while. I think I did a pretty good job at that with at the city of Hinesville. But now I've kind of shifted in my interests, and now it's more about empowering people who want to spread a cause or a message or a product that they really believe in, and help teach them how to do it themselves. Because everyone doesn't have a goal or a goal to hire a PR person or a budget, but they know they need communication. So kind of teaching them how to do it and offering them assistance is something I found passion in recently.
Okay. Can you kind of describe the transition from working for public sectors and then transitioning into representing private sectors?
So when working with the public sector, I was still dealing with a lot of private people because business owners are part of, you know, our constituent space. So I was already dealing with a lot of business owners and kind of giving them advice and encouraging them, even in my role with the public relations manager at the city of Hinesville. Not so much doing their PR for them, but just if they had a question, you know, just giving them a tip or two. So it started out like that. And then when I had my kids, I had two girls back to back, you know, one 2012, one 2013. My desire to be at home with them more overweighed my desire to necessarily save, you know, save everyone. So that's when I started thinking I have to find a way to still do PR, but still be home.
Right.
And so I started kind of just reaching out to people and, you know, offering my assistance, and the word spread. And before you know it, I had more work on the side than I did during my daytime job. And so I had to kind of just go private.
All right. Okay. Well, to jump into the public relations aspect and get more into depth of what that is, just being a public relations concentration student myself here at Savannah State University, I understand that research is the first key step for planning in public relations. So can you describe your research methods or techniques for developing campaigns?
When developing campaigns, I usually do quantitative and qualitative research because I don't want to just understand what the numbers say, but I want to understand what the people behind the numbers feel.
Exactly.
So I pretty much start all campaigns with, you know, finding out statistics on whatever topic it is, finding out the numbers about the demographics, and then also going and doing researches to see what blog posts are out, what articles have been shared, mm-hmm. what complaints have come through your customer service channels, you know, what are people saying about you in general, what's the feel. Sometimes I do it through just researching online. Sometimes I actually do surveys and focus groups. It just depends on the client and what the campaign is. But definitely both quantitative and qualitative research, because it's good to have concrete information, but to be able, I call it the skeleton, and then I like to put some meat on the bones with the qualitative part, so reaching out to people.
Okay, so when doing going through with the research, the first phase, do you generally do that on your own or with a group of people, or do you facilitate certain tasks? Okay, you do surveys or you do background research?
Usually it's with a group. You know, I pull people together. I'm a believer in focusing on people's strengths.
Mm-hmm.
So if I find or I know someone who has a stronger background in maybe statistics, or someone who has a stronger background with working with spreadsheets to give us the graphics or the information we need, or just needing a fresh pair of eyes, someone who's going to look at it from a different point of view than I do, I usually pull a team together or reach out to people who I know.
Okay. So in your presentation that you gave us today, you were basically touching on the importance of writing through PR,
mm-hmm.
and just also touching on how you transitioned out of being a representative for a public sector and then creating your own business of PR. So how often do you write, and can you please explain the importance of writing for PR again for us, and mm-hmm. some of the different forms of writing in the PR field?
Okay, I write every single day. Like, I write every day. My goal is always to write at least 1,000 words a day. So whether that's a journal entry, a blog post, an essay, website copy, I'm always write something. And I try to write different styles of writing, because sometimes, based on the client base, you can get stuck in writing just press releases or just website copy, and you kind of get a little rusty in the other areas.
Mm-hmm.
So usually whatever my project is that I'm working on my time, my reflection time, I try to write a different type of style so that I can kind of just stay moving in all of it.
Okay, for a lot of students, I know they would probably say, well, my schedule's too condensed. I don't know how to, you know, work writing into it, or I'm already doing writing. Mm-hmm. Should I do more writing outside of that? So what would you say to students who would ask those questions?
So for students who ask that question, I would say that you can always find time to write. Is it a priority?
Mm-hmm.
So that TV show, you might have to give up 30-minute TV show. You might have to, you know, you might have to give up something else. But if you want to make writing a priority, or you feel like writing is going to be in your career, then it's something you have to, you know, just train yourself to do. And I also tell people, you know, if you want to be a writer, you need to be a reader, because that's where you're exposed to different types of writing. That's where you're exposed to new words. That's where you're exposed to new formats. And that's where you learn about what else is going on. So definitely I would say make time to write, write every day, and read.
Totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
Just to piggyback off of your presentation and the part where you mentioned social media is a constantly changing, based on your demographic when you're doing a campaign, is something that you pretty much have to be savvy with social mm-hmm. media as a PR professional. So what is the best writing technique for conveying the same message on different social media platforms like Twitter, Facebook, mm-hmm. Instagram, or etc.?
I tell people to start with a theme. What is the theme of that message? Is your theme healthy living? Is your theme an event you're doing? Is the theme of ebook you want them to download? You start with that, and that's going to be in every message. It's just the way you sell that theme to the person is going to change. For example, in Instagram is visual, so you're going to rely on the photo. You need a good photo that's going to grab attention first, and then when they grab the attention, it's going to evoke emotion and make them want to do what you tell them to. And you're going to describe that in so many words in your Instagram post. Whereas on Facebook, you have a little bit more room to use words in videos or links or whatever you want to do. And again, you have to keep that theme in mind, though. Right. What is it you want them to do? And then I always tell people you need to be pushing them to a call to action. Whether you want them to click on something, like something, visit a blog post, you need to tell them. You know, I often joke that you lose your manners when it comes to social media, because you are actually telling people what to do. You're telling them what you want them to do, but you have to convince them that it's worth it. If you click on this, it's going to be worth it. If you download this, it's going to be worth it. So no matter if it's the same post, different platforms, just pick a theme, you know, that subject, and write around that within the parameters of that platform. And then use the platform strength to your advantage. For example, you know, Twitter is usually based on links. Mm-hmm. Now they're trying to move towards photos and live streaming, but their primarily focus is to share links. Right. Instagram is photos. Facebook is a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. So,
okay, just to go back to when we talked about writing and how often you write, you know, what are some ways that you practice to improve or strengthen your writing skills?
It depends on the type of writing that I'm trying to improve. News writing, if I'm trying to improve news writing, then I read newspapers. And I read newspapers that I feel like are doing a good job with their writing, or a reporter that I feel that does a good job. And I read their articles. I try to analyze why they chose to write the way they did, how I would have written it differently. If I'm trying to strengthen my news writing skills. With feature stories, one thing I learned about myself was, like I said before, I'm creative, but I don't have a good imagination. So when I was writing a lot of magazine articles and they were human interest and feature stories, I played around with different ways to talk about and describe things, as opposed to just being, yeah, I went to her house and we sat in the rocking chair and she had a lovely home and she shared with me and she's a bubbly spirit. I had to figure out unique ways to tell the story. So with that, I went back to fiction. I started reading more fiction books because, you know, for a while I was reading research books, textbooks, articles. So to get better with feature writing, I started reading more fiction books and just learning new ways to, you know, tell stories and to present characters. Because, you know, human interest, you're dealing with real people, right, but still, you know, position them in that way. So it just depends on the writing style that I'm trying to improve, how I try to get better at it. But in all writing, I just make a point to write every day, try to learn new words. Now, this year, I'm trying something new where I research an English rule every week. It's like I'll research the English rule and then I'll implement it the following week. Like, you know, whether it's commas this week, comma splices, or, you know, parentheses the next week, whatever it is, just focusing on being better about my English rules. Because when I do a lot of social media writing, so sometimes your English and your full writing skills can kind of lack, because you're used to writing to the platform.
Okay.
I did healthcare VR for a while, and it was okay, but it was so depressing because I'm so emotional. So I had the cancer patient line and the heart health line and the traumatic brain injury line. That was just tough. I'm crying more than the families. That wasn't for me. And I learned that. I loved that experience. I got some great things out of it, but I was able to learn that before getting into my profession. So I think that's important for students to volunteer or to intern as much as possible in different areas so you can figure out what it is you like when it comes time to look for a job. For current professionals, keep learning. I run into so many people who think that I've already got my degree, I've been doing this job, I know this job. Well, that job may leave, or your responsibilities may change. I didn't go into the city of Hinesville thinking that I would be a webmaster or a speech writer or even an event planner, but here I was doing it, you know. So just keep learning, always be willing to learn. Don't get stuck in a place where you're like, you know, I already know that, or I don't have to learn that, I'll let someone else do it.
Right.
Those are the tips or the advice I would give.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming to speak for us on behalf of the QEP. We thank you so much for sitting down and doing this interview with us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes another episode of The Writer's Way. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks to those who helped make this show about poetry possible. Special thanks to Nakia Stevens, Jason Johnson, and Crystal Hart. Thanks to the QEP's very own Adriana de Oliveira and Lisa Yant. Thanks to Dustin Michael for his help in production and Grace Curry at WHCJ for their support. Have a pleasant day and tune in next time for more episodes of The Writer's Way. I'm Elvina Sykes. Thanks for listening and keep writing. Don't forget that you can listen to all of the Right Attitude radio shows by visiting the Quality Enhancement Plan website, qep.savannahstate.edu. Also, please follow us on Facebook at Right SSU, Twitter at Right SSU, and Instagram at Right_SSU.